listening to the Neshot Hamayim podcast, where I talk about birth, life, nature, and the divine wisdom we can gain through it all. I'm Chaya, your hostess. Blessed is Adonai, ruler of the universe, who brought us to this place and time for this purpose.
How many babies is this for you? Is this your third or your fourth baby?
Okay. My fourth baby. So my fourth planned unassisted, and then after three successful so far, God willing, fourth successful.
I think it's gonna be great though. The first question I was thinking of when I was thinking of you today was, a lot of women, when they have their first babies, they'll say things like, I don't want to have a home birth or even, an unassisted birth regardless with my first baby. But if it works out really well, then I'll do it in the future, which of course, as we know, that can always lead down another whole road. But what made you decide that you were I'm going unassisted straight out of the gate? I'm going to do it from the beginning.
So just to back up, because I think the context of where I was coming from at the time is important to mention. I was never a birth nerd. My mom did typical, like everybody in my family, except for my crazy hippie family members, again, with quotes, crazy hippie family member. We had like one in the family who was crazy enough to do a home birth. So that was kind of like, I didn't grow up in a family culture of home births being really a thing. I have a sister. My mom had pretty run-of-the-mill hospital births. I always knew two things about my birth story was that I had a massive head and I broke my mom's tailbone. I don't remember if there was an epidural or induction. I think she went into labor naturally. I don't really remember. So that was my upbringing. Pretty mainstream. You go to the hospital, you do the things. And when my husband and I, we knew we wanted to start a family pretty much right away. So when we got married, we're like, oh, or more like me, I was thinking, oh, I should probably learn something about birth. I don't know. And I wasn't really big on listening to birth stories. Just wasn't really interested at that time. I'm definitely more interested now. And if anybody wants to share that birth story, I'm like, yes, lay it on me, But at that point, I was not interested. And it was also when podcasts were, there were a variety of podcasts, but they weren't like what it is now,
where like everybody has a podcast,
which is great.
Which is awesome.
Right. So at that point, I actually preferred, I started to look for birth information through podcasts because it was kind of like its own filter with it being so niche still. So yeah, and I didn't want, I have always been the kind of person who I am an earth child, like I've always loved plants and loved connecting with nature and stuff like that. And I've always believed in nature's design and things like that. So I knew just Googling birth was not going to be for me, because it was just going to send me to the hospital stuff. And I have also never been a big fan of doctor's offices or any of that kind of stuff. So I knew I had my own kind of like aversion to hospitals, but I didn't know, again, I didn't really know anything at all. And so I wanted to give podcasts a try. And I was looking through all these pretty pastels and these cursive, late logos for these different podcasts that were birth related. And I was like, not really my thing. And most of them were like birth stories. And I just was like, and I think that's pretty. I like pastels. I like cursive. It's nice. But I just, it wasn't leading me towards what I was looking for in that realm. And then I happened upon Indie Birth. I can't, there's no way to tell my story without mentioning Indie Birth.
So many women, I think, which is awesome.
So this is going to be a giant like ad for Indie Birth probably. But at that time, they didn't have their like fuchsia logo. It was this like yelling at you orange and blue and like very, it wasn't yelling at you, but it was just very like, blah, And it was like triangles. I don't remember exactly what shape it was making. It was kind of like a Star of David, but it wasn't a Star of David. And it just really, just huge, massive difference from the pastels and everything. So it was just this like stark like color coming at you. Yeah. And I was like, what the heck is this? And it was called Taking Back Birth, which is still the name of the podcast, or Marin's podcast anyway. And it had the name, you know, Indie Birth on it. And I, you know, in another lifetime ago, was a musician and was really into indie, you know, indie rock, indie music. Like, that was my music. And so I'm like, okay, is this like indie in that kind of way? You know, like it's kind of like off label kind of thing. And so I was like, this is weird. I'm going to check it out, basically. And then it was Marin sharing all of her wisdom and all of her knowledge about really just approaching everything. But basically, you know, at that point, it was just this midwife who was not necessarily like, you know, F the man, buck the system, like, but she was like, hey, let's question this. Let's dive into like this. Hey, this is a normal thing. Why? And I was like, oh yeah, why? Weird. And then she would talk about statistics and her experience and things about physiological birth and stuff like that. And so it just really piqued my interest. It was exactly what I was looking for. I like to think about these things philosophically. She had a spiritual perspective. I'm very obviously, you know, anybody who follows my stuff, like very spiritual, but it was really important. The pieces that she was mentioning about kind of like these mainstream routes or these things that are really common and just questioning and just looking into it and just like, hey, let's just approach this micro thing and talk about it, you know, and like blood volume and all this kind of stuff. So that was the beginning of that journey. And I was just eating it all up. I probably binge listen to every episode. I definitely caught up to wherever it was in time. That wasn't, when was this? This would have been like 2015, 2016, 2015, I think. So she just was a wealth of information. At that time, Indie Birth had their childbirth ed course that was called How to Have an Indie Birth. Now it's 13 Moons. Now 13 Moons is much more extensive. There's more to it. It's a fuller course. But How to Have an Indie Birth, it was really helpful for educating about physiological birth. It was something that I hadn't even seen in my little bits of research for childbirth ed stuff. It was unlike any of that because it was very, if you leave it alone, here's birth kind of thing. And whereas other courses were like, you know, how to navigate the hospital system and how to do this and that. And that can be valuable if that's what you're going for. But I wanted to know what's baseline.
That's a really good, like, what's the foundation? To approach it, because I don't think people in general really come at birth thinking what is normal, because they just think that what we're doing right now is normal. So there's no question of like, if it existed in a vacuum, what would it look like? So it's an interesting perspective that that's how you were approaching it from the beginning. And I think a lot of people would benefit if they were curious about it in that way. So I like that.
Yeah. I think that's probably just kind of who I am. Like I approach most things, which kind of gets me in trouble in some areas where it's like, people are like, hey, we built up this whole thing. Why do you keep trying to dig past everything to get? Yeah, why? We did all this stuff. Why are you trying to like break it down to nothingness and then build? It was exactly what I was looking for. Super eye-opening. So that, I think, just in this conversation was like foundational for me, was learning what normal was and then learning the value behind asking why in this realm also, because again, that is definitely a piece of my personality, is asking why and all of that kind of stuff. And I like to tell the story, I used to watch like surgeries when they used to have shows with actual surgeries and stuff, And usually after those shows would be like the maternity wing, those shows of like hospital births.
And the
intro themselves were horrendous. They were, and they would be like screaming women, screaming babies, screaming doctors, everybody screaming. Be like, turn it off as quickly as possible. But we also had animals. So I grew up with animals and we had a herd, we had goats and we bred our dog for a little while, especially with the goats. It was just like, we'd wake up and look out the window and be like, there's another baby.
Without any help.
Oh, hello. They did it. Yeah. And it was just totally normal. So in that sense, I was very familiar with nature and birth. They walk hand in hand and they're just fine together. But again, it was human birth that I was like, nope, I'm running away from that. That looks awful. So I didn't want anything to do with it until it was time for me to deal with it. Yeah. So that's my long, but I think relevant foundation for how I started down the unassisted path.
With your husband, I think a lot of women and I know Maren and Margot have talked about this, a lot of people talk about it, is, you know, I want to have a home birth, but my husband doesn't want me to, or I want to have this kind of birth, but my husband's afraid of this, or, you know, my partner's concerned about, you know, these things. So how is it with your husband? Was he immediately on board, or was he like, what? I'm not really sure about this.
Well, that's a very important piece and an important question. And I can't, I almost feel like my answer is not super helpful for a lot of relationships I have to say that the foundation of my relationship with my husband has always been like, even just as before we were romantic or anything, he was always on my apocalypse team. Like, he was always like on my zombie team, you know, like, crap hits the fan, I'm going to collect this guy, and we're gonna, you know, this guy and these, some of these friends, and we would all, you know, conquer the world together kind of thing. Because I just had, we have always had that kind of relationship of like partnership, trust. And I know that not everybody's
right,
that's not everybody's relationship. So with that foundation, when I started doing my research dive and listening and stuff like that, I would just tell him what I felt like he would need to know or he might like to know. And then I would just constantly talking about it. Just, I would ask him like, what are you worried about? And we would talk about that. And that's a good thing to be worried about, I can see why. And then I would look into it. But it was almost like, it was like my job to like do the digging, and I was happy to do it. And then I would just share with him, like, you know, hey, so here's what I found. and then there were plenty of times where if it was like just kind of a lot for me to try to reiterate, I would just make a note like, okay, I'm going to show him this article, or I'm going to play back this piece of this podcast episode for Maren or whatever. And so he could hear in a way that was probably more eloquent, you know, more put together and more knowledgeable than what I would be able to, again, reiterate. But other than sharing those things, because I've asked him, like, even I think somewhat recently, we have talked about this, and I just like, why did you, like, how did you get to where you are now, you? And he just basically was like, well, I trusted you. I trusted that you knew what you would need and that you would tell me what I needed to know. And then beyond that, for both of us, really, beyond the education, it came down to an understanding and a trust that things will be what they will be. Mm-hmm. And we believe in God and God, you know, God's sovereignty and things like that. Like, if there's something we need to know that's beyond us, you know, we both had this prayer of like, okay, God's going to let us know. Mm-hmm. What's up, you know, if we change our plans, God's gonna let us know. And we weren't just like letting that sort of like float into existence. We were intentionally like bringing that prayer, like, let us know, you know, what's going on, kind of thing. And then it was, so there was that aspect of it, is like, he trusted me. I took on a responsibility of letting him know what I felt like he needed to know, or what was important to me, or things that were coming up and stuff like that. So it was just like communication between us, and like communication between us and the divine, basically. But yeah, that was the communication and calling on that mutual trust and respect for each other was like absolutely paramount for our journey together with that, basically. And I know that that's not so easy for other couples. That's not so easy with the dynamics of other relationships. But I think if you can get there or be there, I think that's, at least from my perspective, that's what it takes. No, it makes
perfect sense. And I think that's a hurdle that a lot of women face with whatever their birth choices are, is whether it's a partner or whoever their support person is, you know, whether it's their mother or a friend, or, you know, you just face all of these opinions about what your choices are going to be. And a lot of people are really willing to put their fears or their negative experiences on you. And so that's a really hard thing to stand in the face of and be like, no, this is the decision that we're making. You know, I've had clients who have done unassisted birth, and that's the same thing. They tell people what their plans are, and everyone's like, what are you, crazy? You know, they get this notion that that's the reaction that they get. And so you really have to, I think, be pretty solid in that this is your decision, knowing where that's coming from. And like you said, you're not just going into it like, well, we'll just see what happens. You know, I mean, I'm sure some people do, but you know, you had a very specific reason why you chose that. And you were able to hold tight to that when people were like, why are you making that decision or questioning that at all? So.
Yeah. And it wasn't easy.
Everyone
first
like,
one.
That's what you
now
do.
It's
we
much,
know what you're
now
doing.
It's like really easy. Yeah. But the first for my first, it wasn't totally easy to hang on to why we were doing this and stuff like that. Were definitely times that there were enough, you know, others or my own, you know, fears coming in that I had to, you know, sort of self audit. And I think that's important too. Like, I think that's actually a really good use of fear, is to take those moments of uncertainty and use them to kind of step back and think, okay, why am I doing this? What are we doing? What's the game plan? And then what does it come down to? You know, what's really worth, you know, this or that for me? And, you know, and that can be a really useful tool. And same with like other people's anxieties and fears and stuff. If they're bringing that in, again, it's an opportunity to really either solidify what you have committed to, or solidify your own beliefs behind it, or, you know, consider what they're saying and like, again, decide whether like, actually, maybe I do want to look into this other thing or potentially go this slightly different route or something like that. So, but yeah, our family, oh my gosh, we pretty much hid our intentions.
Until it was like too late.
Until it was basically too late. And our family were like, okay, we're not stupid. In the beginning of the pregnancy, we were not really sure, which was genuine, that we weren't really sure. And then we kind of were like, okay, we're going to do a midwife. We were saying it with certainty, and then but in our minds, we were like, I don't think that's what we want to do. And then in the middle of that pregnancy, we moved across states. So that was like another part of it. And I am a pretty private person. I'm more willing to share things now than back then, but like then there was no way in my mind, in order to build up a relationship with somebody well enough that I would be comfortable with them being in my space, my very, very personal space, it was going to take like years. So I was like, there's no way I'm going to be comfortable even with the kindest, you know, could have been the most dreamiest, kindest midwife possible. And I probably would have still been like, so I kind of was, when we moved, that for me was like, I'm not doing a midwife at all. Like there's just, it's not going to happen. But we didn't tell our families that we had like basically made that decision, and we just sort of like let them kind of
believe.
Yeah, and we didn't want to correct that belief in their mind, which is also known as deception. But, you know, it's like there are some things that we didn't want to invite their stuff in. Yeah. Because even the home birth alone, even the home mm-hmm. birth with a midwife for them was a big stretch. That was hard for them. So the whole idea of us doing it completely unassisted, they probably would have lost their minds. And eventually they did a little bit. But like basically at the end, we had some family members who very openly and angrily, mm-hmm. you know, let us know their fear, basically. And so that was not fun. Imagine. But at that point it was almost like too late, and also like we're doing this.
Thanks for
we're comfortable with this
and in the process.
Yeah, there's a lot of unknowns.
And now this is actually worse.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah.
And the other part of it too is that for my first, we lived in town like mm-hmm. 5 minutes from a hospital. So that was another part of it. There was never a do or die. And
right.
You know, I'm speaking figuratively, but it could have been a reality. Like we weren't going to be home or bust, you know. It was not like a sheer hatred of hospitals or anything that put us there. It was just, we were going to do this for ourselves. Like, this is the best in my mind from what I had learned. This was going to be the best scenario to facilitate a physiological birth. And if things were going wrong, or if they felt wrong, something was up, mm-hmm. like straight to the hospital. We're not hanging around to like think, oh, well, no, mm-hmm. like this is what hospitals are for. And that was always part of the plan too. So that was us and our families were once it was clear that we were going to do an unassisted, they were not happy. And they let us know. And that's kind of the beauty of keeping some of those things close.
Yeah.
You know, keeping some of those cards close to your heart is that you have the opportunity to really, really like, okay, this is what I'm wanting to do. This feels right for us. And you don't have other voices floating around and, you know, adding their stuff to it. Even if it's just stress. Dealing with other people's
well,
stuff.
What did you guys do? I mean, you're getting ready. Your baby's due in July. Am I remembering this correctly?
Yeah, probably early. Well,
I don't know what it is
early
about
July. Depends.
Montana, but everyone has their babies.
Oh,
July.
And that was another
piece. What's happening like in October, other than the fact that it's snowing and no one can get anywhere? But every year I have all these people that are like, I'm due July 12th. I'm due July 15th. I'm like, what is? And I go like months with no one, and it's like four people in a row, and I'm like, what is going on in this date?
Like, I know so many
crazy
people who are also due in July right now.
Winter starts October 1st.
Did we plan this on accident?
But I'm sure with your birth, you've probably learned. But, you know, you now with your fourth, you've probably perfected it to some degree. But what do you do to, I guess, prepare for doing this unassisted? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that are like, where do I even start? How do I even begin? Other than by doing something like you did, where you're becoming educated and finding things to read and listen to and courses to take that will support that desire for a physiological birth, which I think is a huge piece. But what else do you do now moving forward preparing for this?
Yeah. So with that foundation, because I don't know that I would have even known how to practically prepare if it wasn't for, and that's like, not that you can't find a helpful list somewhere, but just like what I knew I was going to need or want for me, having the understanding of how physiological birth works was, yes, foundational. So with that background, so now what we do, just sort of as a practicality, and I'm kind of calling on like the general things that we do to prepare for our past births also, I guess number mm-hmm. one is nutrition. To facilitate physiological healthy birth, nutrition is like the most important. People will throw in like exercise and like some of these other things like breathing classes and stuff like that. Those are great.
Mm-hmm.
Nutrition is number one. So what I make sure to do when I find out I'm pregnant is First of all, like, make sure that I have my protein. And like, I know there are disputes about vegetarian and vegan and all of that stuff. I am omnivorous, and my personal belief is that the best route to real solid pregnancy nutrition is animal protein, animal fats, and all the other stuff is just fun extras, yes. kind of stuff. From, so like, if you could just eat a cow,
all of it,
like, yeah. like the whole pregnancy, you'd be good. Maybe drink some water, drink the milk, you know, have another cow with the milk.
Eat your other cow.
But anyway, so yeah, so nutrition, but like probably my number one, like, again, for me, and knowing my body and everything is I have to make damn sure that I'm getting my protein and that it's that good fatty, you know, good quality, animal protein for me every day. And it becomes a chore and it's not always fun. Yeah. And I don't always want to eat it, but I have to, it's important.
It becomes so hard to find that variety. I agree with you. It's super important, you know, and I know like recommending that you eat like, fish at least once a week and, you know, all those things, but it does become, especially over a course of 40 weeks or 42 weeks or however long you're pregnant, of trying to find that variety and be like, oh my gosh, do we have chicken or cow or deer? These are the three things that we have. How do I eat mm-hmm. every single day?
Yes.
But it is really important. And being creative and finding like
yeah.
using eggs. You know, eggs are a great source. They're like a complete protein. They're fantastic. Right. You know, so trying to find different ways to maybe not necessarily eat meat every meal, but to find that, again, animal protein, whether you're using butter, you know, milk, like you said, cheeses are great. You know, I know there's a lot of stuff out there about cheese, mm-hmm. but I think we all know that that's kind of crazy time, but there's so many things. If you can
that's a whole other thing.
Real nutrition for pregnancy. She even has some for people who are on a vegetarian or vegan diet, but finding those resources is huge for getting some variety so you don't get burnt out, because that is, even up to the very last minute you're pregnant and into postpartum, nutrition is like, that's the key.
Right. At least for my postpartum nutrition, Mother B's first 40 days is like my nutrition Bible for postpartum. Now that they have the, 9 golden months or something like that, their pregnancy book, that has been super helpful, because I'm not good at cooking. I'm not creative with cooking. Like, that adds a whole other thing. But having recipes that I know are going to be the kind of nutrition, like targeted nutrition. And I think Lily Nichols, actually, mm-hmm. she has recipes in her book too, Real Food for Pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And that is super helpful. Or finding, I think Indie Birth shares some recipes, but just finding those resources that have recipes also is super helpful. And I think for my first pregnancy, we pretty much ate pretty on the nose paleo diet for a while. And that has been actually helpful, just in like me coming up with things, mm-hmm. is just like kind of thinking paleo, because then it's like, it's just simple and it's not, and I can just like, okay, I can put things in those different categories, like, it's helpful that way too.
To build when you're like, okay, I know I need this component and this component. How can I make this interesting? How can I change this?
Right.
So I'm not getting bored.
Right.
And I know I'm getting it.
Yeah. So nutrition is huge, huge, huge. And sort of like add on to that, that is important, but it kind of like, you know, can be mm-hmm. under the umbrella of nutrition is hydration. Usually for me, early on in the pregnancy is a little bit harder, because I, for some reason, I tend to crave like teas, and I'll do like alfalfa or dandelion is a friend of mine. And I'll mm-hmm. use in a raspberry leaf. People usually save those for third trimester, but I have always,
I think
like,
you
that's,
can take
that's
it,
just a
you know,
good
all the way through.
Yeah, you can. As long as, so interestingly, I tend to take raspberry leaf.
Yeah, I do that.
Red raspberry leaf
too.
Anyway, like no matter what is happening. And weirdly, with this pregnancy, this current one, I had taken like a little bit of a break. I don't remember why. And then I found out I was pregnant. I was like, ooh, I want to make sure to do my red raspberry leaf. But then my body was like not happy with me to have it. So I was like,
I love
gosh,
it.
Gosh dang it. You know, because I know that there, it's really nutritive. Yeah. Like it's really supportive of the uterus and all of that good stuff. So it's like, it would be a really good ally to have. I don't know why. So I didn't want to take my chances. Yeah, I didn't know what the deal was. So I just kind of was like, okay, fine. I don't know what your deal is, Bobby, but we'll take a break, I guess.
But yeah. Hydration is so, absolutely essential, especially in the first trimester when you're trying to dilute out all those hormones and help your liver, you know, filter all of that and combat this, you know, if you have nausea or if you have anything like that, you know, staying hydrated and eating lots of protein and then helping build that blood volume. That's going to be so important in the second half of your pregnancy. So if you're not doing those, that's why nutrition and hydration are just like the best things that you can do.
Yeah. Well, and they help stave off nausea too. Like if you can get that foundation before pregnancy and then maintain it or, you know, enhance it through pregnancy, that really helps with nausea. I don't know, you know, the magic fairy answer to getting rid of nausea, period. but those have been really helpful. And I also, I guess a piece of this too is reading my body and letting my body let me know what is and isn't working for me. So like I mentioned the red raspberry leaf, but even like if I'm starting to feel really sick in the first trimester, then I know it's an opportunity. Okay, how much protein do I think I've gotten? Have I had a good hydrating, you know, drink of some kind right now? Like, and it's usually the protein thing. And when I am getting really sick, oh crap, it's already, you know, 2 o'clock and I haven't had lunch yet. Or I had breakfast and snack and lunch, but it was like cereal something and a banana.
More carbohydrate. And
get like real fast. Cheese. Yeah. Yeah. So it's good. It's important, I think, and very valuable to maintain, again, that like communication with my body to let me know what's what I need and then, or at least like kind of cue me to like, okay, I need to look back. What have I been doing? What have I not been doing? Is there something that I can do more of that's going to help me, help support me better? All the answers are in me, you know, like my body will let me know. And sometimes it's a little bit of a riddle, but usually, you know, it's there and then I can find it and I can figure that out and correct it and move forward and everything. And I think that's also a really important practice for birth, for the, you know, all the way through is practicing that communication with your body and learning what your body is telling you, what that actually means in Kabbalah or Jewish mysticism. And I think this is the case in several belief systems, but there's the animal self and the spiritual self and like the higher thinking self, right? So the animal self is like who I'm speaking to basically when I'm talking about my body and things like that.
Instinctual self.
So like visualize it. Yeah. So I visualize it literally as like almost a separate entity when I'm like trying to decipher and I have a conversation with my animal self, like, what do you need? What do you want? What's going on? You know? And, but it's helpful at least for me. So that might be a tool for other people to use. It's just kind of like visualize it as that way. What's your animal self telling you? What's it communicating? And that is valuable in birth. So back to your original question, what do I practically do to prepare? Nutrition, massive. Hydration, massive. And then I move my body. I don't say exercise.
I think you get a very
necessarily like
image in your head, especially in this culture of like what that looks like. Like you're wearing leg warmers maybe and like a leotard,
right?
But, you know, or running really fast on the treadmill.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going to the gym, doing squats. Yeah. Like doing, and then not just doing squats, but doing like 10 in a row before you move on to the, you know, the donkey kicks or whatever the heck. No, I think for me, when I'm pregnant, what I focus on is not staying in one position. Like, it could be a great position. I don't know. Sitting cross-legged on the floor. Great. Wonderful. But if I'm sitting in that position for like several hours, yep, several days a week, over and over again, it's not going to be very optimal in the long run. So I try. So my own mental checklist is movement. And I just move my body. And I like Katie Bowman's philosophy of natural, what is it, nutritious movement or something like that. I think it's nutritious movement. It's like kind of like ancestral, you know, lifestyle type movements and all of her stuff. And I just apply that to my life in general, but especially when I'm pregnant, I try to be really intentional with that. So that's like when I'm, you know, and I have my other kids. So when I'm bending down to pick them up, I'm making sure that I'm doing the correct, you know, the good posture of picking them up. Or like if I need to pick up a toy or a few toys or something.
Or 100.
And I kind of like make toys. Huh? Yeah. Or 100.
All day.
100 times a day. Yes. Yeah. I'll take that opportunity to not like, and then bend over in half and like pick it up or whatever. I'll try to take those opportunities to squat down, or even if there's like a million that I'm picking up all at once, I'll be on hands and knees and like, you know, crawling around the room, you know, and basically just, I just try to be really intentional with how I'm moving, how often I'm moving, my posture, which has been gotten really bad. Actually, I'm sitting in terrible posture now. But I try to like, you know, make sure I'm not tucking my pelvis too much. And I also avoid, I think the only exercises that I really avoid are like bouncing exercises. So jogging, running.
Oh, what?
No trampoline, even though I know it's so fun.
Those are terrible.
But I try to avoid those because, and I definitely do not do Kegels. And basically what I avoid is any kind of like exercise that's going to tighten up all the pelvic bowl, muscles. 'Cause those do need to be, like all of our muscles, our core and all of that need to be strong. Yeah. Exactly. But they also need to be flexible, right? So tightening those all up is not going to be helpful when I need to pass a baby through.
An issue that people get so fixated on having the tight pelvic floor and being concerned about, you know, incontinence postpartum or just not feeling as secure as they were prenatally, but not thinking about the fact that you can actually overdo that to the point where it can be detrimental. And like even people who are super, super active or, you know, really, really muscular, right, sometimes it's really hard to release that tension when you're pregnant and then in labor. And so trying to train yourself to find that moderation and not to do one thing or the other too much so that you're not, you know, either too loose or too tight. And talk about moderation, but
and then the other piece, Olivia asked why no running, and that's just because you're when you're hitting the ground, you know, you're lifting yourself into the air essentially and hitting the ground over and over, it's creating that bounce, and it's not such a big deal early on in pregnancy, obviously, but when you have a heavier baby and all the, you know, the amniotic, the fluids and placenta, all that weight, it's just constantly putting pressure on downward, and those are the same muscles that you would need to be flexible and all of that. So that's why I don't do it. But what I was also going to say, and I think that's a really good question for this piece, is that if you've been running, like if you are a runner or you've already been doing like, you know, deadlifting and like all this like stuff like that people will look at these videos of like pregnant women, you know, doing deadlifts or like stuff like that, or crazy acrobatics and stuff. Like, do you think that they just randomly started doing that
maybe
in their pregnancy, or does it seem like they've been doing that for a long time? So when that's the case, like, keep doing what's listen making you feel good. And again, like, with the biggest piece is, listen to your body. And if your body's telling you, what, can we stop doing this? then you should. It would behoove you to stop doing that.
She was a runner, and if it's feeling good, lots of marathons, and she ran through like her first two trimesters of pregnancy, and she got into her last trimester, and she was having so much pelvic pain, and like, you know, as she was having all of those, that ligament pain, and then in the symphysis pubis, she was having so much pain, and it was so funny, because she's usually a pretty intuitive person, but I think it just shows that sometimes we get out of that practice, and she was like, I don't understand why I'm having this much pain. And I was like, probably because you're like 7 months pregnant and you're running every single day, you should probably consider stopping, or like, you know, we've got into a longer conversation about it. Like, I'm like, what are you doing when it's hurting? And she's like, well, I go running every day, and then I come home and it's really sore. And I'm like, okay, well, so, I mean, there is that extra weight.
Yeah.
So you just really do have to kind of pay attention to what your body's telling you. I mean, some women go all through their pregnancies, no problem, like you said. And some women don't. That's why it's very individual.
Yeah.
And it's very important to be in tune with that. Like, what am I doing when I'm feeling this? You know, how often is it happening? What else is going on? And just taking those few minutes to go through that, like, mental checklist of, like you said, with so many other things, like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And what's causing it? What makes it better? What makes it worse?
Right. And just because you're having pain in a certain area, it doesn't, someone asked me once in a previous pregnancy, I had these, for me, it was like a big mystery. I don't understand why these pains are happening. My sort of like Western medicine segmented that part of me, analyzed, you know, the pain. And I was trying to figure out what the problem was, and nothing. Yeah. It wasn't answering the question for me. And she asked me, what's going on with you, you know, in this way. And it was more of like a deeper, like, emotional, spiritual, mental kind of realm kind of question. And this is funny, because I was already like in the indie birth community. Like, this was already a thing that I was familiar with, but for some reason I just like couldn't go there in my mind. I needed somebody else to like ask me this question before I was like, oh yeah, that I believe that that's a real connection. Sure enough, it kind of unlocked this other perspective, and it ended up being the answer, basically. And once I started addressing that part of it, the pain went away. And so it was really interesting that way too. And so our pain and all of that stuff, I know this isn't necessarily like an exercise specific, you know, topic, but like the pains and the twangs and the pulling and the this and the that can also have nothing to do with your exercises. It could have something to do with some inner work that you're needing to do. There probably have been things that are like, hey, hello, tapping you on the shoulder, that we kind of brush away. Yeah. And so now our body is like, all right, let me get in here, and get your attention this way. Then,
you know, like you said, I mean, moving your body, you know, regardless of how you choose to do that, I mean, it's not just physical, which it's great for circulation and all of those things, but it's also you're moving that energy that's in your body as well. I mean, you could have, you know, stuck energy that's emotional, spiritual. You could have some sort of mental block, and sometimes moving your body is the best way to get that energy moving or unstuck, you know, and be able to then return to it and revisit it and hopefully see if there's a way to resolve it. And so it's interesting how easy it is for us to get out of our, to apply those things to other people. And then you're like, oh, I've been doing that for myself at all.
So for the exercise thing, another thing that I try to start implementing, if I'm not already doing it, is stretching. And some people really like yoga. I'm not really a yoga person, but I do what I call ballerina stretches, and it's totally made up. Like, it's just in my own mind what I call it. But I just do all these, you know, head arms over your head, and you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's, it just feels really good for me, but mostly the point is stretching and trying to get some of those areas that I don't often stretch. And I saw some diagram from I think Body Ready Method. I'm not going to remember the name of the muscles or anything, but it was basically showing that when you have your arms above your head, the whole thing, it like goes down your back and opens up certain groin muscles or something like that. And that might be why some women instinctually want to hang from a rebozo or like hang like that to open up that space. Because
you're putting all your weight into that, and I was like, that would make sense. That hanging act.
Yeah. Hmm. So it was just fascinating. I've just been doing stretches that kind of address that whole thing, but it also helps with the visuals for birth, but then also just again understanding, coming back to that, like we are holistic beings. And like something you do like up here could be addressing something way down in your toes, or, you know, like when we do these like pelvic exercises only, well, that might not be only what we need. Like there will be other things that will address, you know, the whole, what you would need in the birth process and stuff like that. So
too, and the way that you're talking about, you know, moving your body and trying to not stay in one position for too long, or doing something without questioning, like, you know, you were doing all those overhead stretches, not really realizing why it felt good, but you were just like, I'm going to do this because it feels good. And it really translates so much into, you know, the labor and birth process, you know, not staying in one position for too long, moving instinctually, regardless of if it looks or sounds weird, you know, and not really paying attention to like that higher part of your brain that's like, why am I doing that? Not even questioning it, just kind of, again, being in tune with your body and following its cues and moving how it feels good, because you're communicating with that animal self again that's like, I need you to move this way, or your baby is like, I need you to move this way. So I think that the way that you do it in pregnancy really probably, whether you're thinking about it consciously or not, is really preparing you for doing that same exact stuff in birth as well.
Yeah. And like, I think birth is the animal self realm, really. It's the spiritual self and the animal self. The like thinking intellectual part of ourselves really has no place.
It just gets in the way.
Like just can take a back seat. Yeah. Can just like hang out over there in the waiting rooms, you know, for the whole birth process, really. So starting to practice letting those parts of ourselves kind of take the lead is, again, really good birth prep all on its own, which is a good segue to the spiritual aspect of everything, is kind of what I already talked about when I was talking about my first pregnancy, the spiritual prep. And I hold the belief that each pregnancy has its own lesson, probably a really hard, you know, lesson to learn through pregnancy that will be like the theme for the whole thing. At the very least, that's true for me. So one of the things that I have come to do is when I'm pregnant, that's when I start like, all right, what are we going to learn this time? What's going to be the lesson, so that I can face it and it doesn't have to come up behind me and like truck me like a, you know, blindside football player. You know, I just, as long as I'm staying open to it, I will hopefully learn the lesson and I will be able to apply it to the birth in some kind of way. And it will all be revealed. Really, it's not necessarily anything that I'm
actively
having to like
out necessarily
do. Right. This is certainly the case while birthing. My job is to just be open and aware and to just go with where it's taking me. So I start that in pregnancy. I try to figure out all the mysteries like right off the bat, because that's just who
You're
I am.
You're not a big surprise.
It's not really
person.
How life works. No, I like to, and it's fun for me, but I've definitely fallen into the trap of thinking, oh, I figured this out. And then it kind of like, oh, no, I didn't figure this out. there was more to this. I keep trying to like close up the chapter, or like close the book.
No,
like,
don't worry about that anymore.
All done. Good job, me. Yeah. And then God, or, you know, the pregnancy lesson opens the book back up and is like, no, we're not done yet. But yeah, that's a part of it. And then again, just trusting the process and having those intentional prayers. Like I mentioned before, I believe that God will let me know if there's something that I need to change in like my plans and things. God and my baby are in communication at all times. It's really just me that has to like make sure I'm keeping those lines of communication open. And then, of course, like me connecting with the baby too. Like I say God, and I do mean God, but like the spiritual communication lines, keeping those open, that applies also to my baby, the spirit of my baby. And sometimes that can look like me just staring down at my stomach, being like, hey, I know you're there, you know, just kind of like acknowledging and just almost like the pregnancy version of like, if you're hanging out with a really good friend and you just kind of sit and you don't talk. And then there are other times where, you know, I am sharing, you know, promises or prayers or blessings or whatever with my baby, or I'm, you know, asking a question, you know, stuff like that, just practicing that communication. And, you know, similarly, staying attuned to what my body's telling me, staying attuned to what the baby is telling me. But even early on, like having, like feeling the little flutters, see if you can feel flutters, or seeing if you feel the presence, you know, the spiritual presence of your baby. Are they hanging out here? Or are they hanging out coming in back heaven somewhere for a little bit? You know, like,
yep.
Right. Like some of my, a couple of my boys were pretty much, once they were here, they were here. And this pregnancy, this baby earlier on felt like they were kind of coming and going. And now, you know, it feels like they're pretty solidly here, but it's just interesting. And I don't think if I wasn't even privy to that idea, I don't know that I would be aware of it. But again, staying open and aware, just keeping an eye out for those types of communications and things are... it's really almost just a matter of that.
That makes sense.
And not much to do again. Well, like
again,
in that
you're
sense,
in the labor process. I mean,
staying open.
You're the only one who's in communication with your baby 24 hours a day, 7 days a week before they're born. So
yeah,
you're definitely the authority on them more than anybody else is. So it makes sense intuitively that, you know, forming that communication as soon as you can feel that they're available to you to make that connection, you know, is important.
Yeah.
Because you guys are doing very important work throughout pregnancy, and then you really are navigating a very intense journey through birth. And it's important to be able to check in, because if you can't check in with your baby, then nobody else is going to be able to do that for you. So having that is a huge part, I think.
Right. With those things aside.
Hey. This is a two-part episode, so stay tuned for part two of the unassisted birth prep conversation. Thanks for joining me here. Remember to subscribe, write a review, and check out the show notes for other ways to connect. Nothing on this podcast is medical or legal advice. By engaging with this content, you agree to take full responsibility for your own experiences. Everything in this podcast is property of Prudence Ministries, a private healing association.